Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Happy to announce, as I guess I just did, that Jim is back. He survived CPAC. If you've ever seen any of the Rocky movies, how Rocky looks after the 14th or 15th rounds, that's how Jim was late Saturday into Sunday. But he's fully rested and ready to go here on Monday like a true professional. Jim, how are you today?
Doing good. You know, people don't realize that, yes, technically it's the Conservative Political Action Conference, but it's also known as the Consuming Plenty of Alcohol Conference. That's the other thing CPAC is short for. I myself did not really go imbibed excess, but yes, it was every bit the grand festivication as you'd think. Trump was warmly welcomed. I wrote a little bit in the Morning Jolt today about this, that, you know, on the one hand, this is, you know, good for him and he should relish it. Let's also point out, though, that most attendees are paying $300 a pop to get in there. So if you don't like Trump, I don't see you spending a lot of money to go show up and be surrounded by a bunch of his fans and red hats and stuff.
So, well, hopefully you got some good swag from based on what I read in the Jolt. Apparently the David Clark bobbleheads were a hot item. I hope you got one of those before they ran out, and some other good swag there, I'm sure. But let's jump to our good martini, which is kind of a little bit odd for a good martini. But there was an important election, not just the CPAC straw poll about how much all the conservatives love Donald Trump, but there was another big election down in Atlanta, and that was to who would become the next chairman of the Democratic National Committee. It was a very tight race, but ultimately the one we were kind of secretly pulling for, Keith Ellison, who would be very easy to run against, we would think, did not win. He will be the deputy DNC chairman, though, but he lost in a tight race to former Obama Labor Secretary Tom Perez, who's also a former Justice Department official. And as you put it in the Jolt today, Jim, if you're just barely more moderate than Keith Ellison, you're still pretty darn far to the left. And as you documented last year, when it looked like Perez might be on the short list for Hillary Clinton's running mate, this is a guy who is hard, hard left. So for Republicans and trying to paint the Democrats as still completely out of touch with middle America and working class voters, this isn't necessarily a bad pick for us.
No, this is not. In fact, it really, this was, you could argue it was something of a win-win. I think what is particularly useful about this is, besides the fact that, yes, there are some Bernie Sanders supporters who are grumbling about this, Trump was quick to jump in and say, oh, I think this was rigged just like the Democratic primary was rigged, and try to pour gasoline onto the fire. Tom Perez recognized that there was a pretty significant division in the party, and there were quite a few folks who preferred Keith Ellison. So one of the ways he tried to mend the fences is that almost immediately after being named chairman, he turned to Keith Ellison and asked him to be his vice chairman. So if Ellison is not, you know, heading up the organization, doing all the TV hits and all the different roles that the chairman would expect as vice chairman, he's going to be in a pretty prominent spot. And in fact, Perez put it quite explicitly, my job is to make Keith Ellison the face of the Democratic Party. Greg, I don't know about you, but I myself am willing to say, Mr. Chairman, I want to help you out on that. For those of you not familiar with the fact that Keith Ellison, who is the former member of the Nation of Islam, he said he didn't realize that Louis Farrakhan was an anti-Semite. As somebody else put it, you don't just join the Nation of Islam because you want to fit in. This is just, oh, I was hanging around with the crowd and everybody decided to do it. No, no. And he made various statements about Jews being slavers and things like that. And, you know, Keith Ellison says, oh, this was a long time ago. I'm completely different from that. I have no, you know, there are, must have been some good choices for the Democratic National Committee to have as chairman who have not ever been a member of the Nation of Islam, which I think most people would describe as either extreme, way out of the mainstream, vaguely menacing, and or cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So out of all that, so they pick Perez, but Perez is very quick to reach out to Ellison. And there are quite a few folks, Democrats, who really do think Keith Ellison needs to be their face, needs to be their most, one of their more prominent spokesmen. Now, as you mentioned that I'd written in the Jolt, this doesn't mean Tom Perez is the you know, kind, cuddly, soft, moderate guy. He's just, you know, a little more buttoned down and better at hiding it. If you actually look at his record at the Department of Labor, look at his record at the Department of Justice, this is a guy who's every bit as extreme, just focused on using the regulatory mess of Leviathan state to get what he wants, and a great deal of basically telling workers, you don't realize how exploited you are. You don't realize how mean your employer is being to you. Thus, we in the government have to step in and set all kinds of rules for everything in your life, everything regarding work-life balance. You can't be trusted to negotiate that with your employers or make those decisions for yourself. We, the government, have to do this for you. My closing note that I thought was just very good, if the Democratic National Committee does not start paying its interns, which, oh, by the way, all internships at the DNC are currently unpaid. If they don't start paying them, we'll be able to throw this at them for a really long time and make the point that the guy who keeps pounding the table for $15 an hour as a minimum wage isn't willing to do anything like pay his interns. And, oh, by the way, when he was at the Department of Labor, he talked about the need for earn as you learn, and how, you know, Germany did a much better job of this with professional apprenticeships and things like that. So kind of implying that he thought unpaid internships, there was something immoral about that. We'll see if he actually changes that policy at the Democratic National Committee.
Wow. And it looks like they're going straight for identity politics again with this dynamic duo at the top of the party. So that should bode well for us. I mean, Howard Dean was a hardcore lefty, but he actually understood what it took to build the party from the grassroots level, which is what Perez says he wants to do. But as long as you have that sort of ideology at the top, I think conservatives and Republicans should be feeling pretty good, but they still have a lot of work ahead of them. But on to the bad martini now, Jim, and the big kerfuffle on Friday at the White House was that there was a gaggle and there were some more liberal outlets that were excluded, including CNN and the New York Times and a few other more liberal outlets. This is leading to what I like to call massive hypocrisy on both sides, because the Obama White House did this to Fox News on at least one occasion, and I think we probably talked about it at the time. They also went after James Rosen when he was a correspondent, I believe, at the Justice Department or the State Department, and basically harassed him, kind of treating him as an enemy of the government. And at that time, the Democrats, of course, had nothing to say. Now that the Democrats are being squeezed out, more conservative outlets are happy to say that, well, Obama did it, so how bad can it be? And, of course, the liberals are crying foul. Jim, it was wrong when Obama did it. It's wrong when Trump does it, and both sides keep crying about it in a way that only damages their own credibility.
Yeah, I saw a comment from the New York Times who said, every time Donald Trump attacks us, our circulation numbers go up. Okay, I guess that's good for you. It certainly helps keep the bottom line going. At no point in that process, though, do you ever stop to say, hey, does the president have a legitimate complaint here? You know, did we make any error or anything like that? As long as you think any criticism from the president is good, you have no incentive to try to avoid any criticism. In fact, you have an incentive to provoke criticism from the president. Now, there are times the president's complaints are going to be basically whining and saying, ah, how dare you write that? Oh, everybody should write nice things about me, yada, yada, yada. But there are times where you and I have pointed out plenty of times where the New York Times has covered things, gotten things flat out wrong, really, you know, shaded things to one side or the other, left out important points. Right now you're seeing a lot of stories. I don't know if the New York Times has written this, but you see a lot of stories about Congressman X or Senator X dodges town hall meeting. Well, the town hall meeting was set up by some lefty group. It's not like the congressman ever agreed to show up to it. So what they do is they basically hold a Democratic rally and an empty microphone and issue a press release saying Republican Congressman so-and-so didn't show up to a town hall meeting. Well, this is, you know, I don't think this is exaggerated to say this is fake news, because the congressman never agreed to show up to this. Greg, you and I could say we are doing a joint interview with Paul Krugman and Michael Moore.
Sure.
Announce it. And then when they don't show up because they think they've got better things to do. Although really, Greg, what would be better than talking to us?
Nothing.
But if they don't show up, say, aha, they dodged our debate. And this is, you know, an old trick for a long time. But a lot of the media is just buying this hook, line, and sinker. Now, in the case of this, I've seen from lawmakers, you know, and I believe presidents in the past, it's plenty of, you know, lots of times you hold a briefing, you bring in a couple of your favorite reporters and you talk to them. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing unethical with that. What the White House press corps starts tearing their hair out is when you do some sort of special briefing, right? Basically, you're saying, well, we're not going to let you in anymore. So there's nothing wrong with doing invitation-only chats, interviews. Every one-on-one president that the president does is technically an exclusive. What you do is you make it available to everybody in the pool report. And I think if you want to shift in that direction, fine. Pretty clearly, Sean Spicer and the rest of the White House press office wanted to kind of send a signal to reporters to say, we don't like you anymore. You're on the outs. It seemed like a very high schoolish approach to dealing with the hostile press. And, you know, I think it just kind of reflects the incentive structure everybody has right now. Everybody right now, bigger fights are better for the media and better for the Trump administration. Both sides are convinced they win those fights. And I think that it's great for them. I think for those of us who just want to know what's going on in the White House are not particularly well served by this model and would like to see things calm down. But I don't think it seems particularly likely anytime soon, Greg.
No, just a massive ego trip on all sides. I can't imagine where there'd be a bigger massive ego. Oh, yes, I do. Let's go to the crazy martini now and go to the Oscars 2017. Jim, we know going into this that there would probably be a number of jabs at President Trump. It's obvious from the way Hollywood has reacted to his candidacy and to his presidency that it was inevitable. You would hope it wouldn't dominate the entire evening. Yet, that's exactly what it did until the very end, I might add. Let's start with what was supposed to be an olive branch at the beginning from Jimmy Kimmel, but it lasted about 5 seconds.
I'm not the man to unite this country, but it can be done. If every person watching the show, I don't want to get too serious, but there are millions and millions of people watching right now, and if every one of you took a minute to reach out to one person you disagree with, someone you like, and have a positive, considerate conversation, not as liberals or conservatives, as Americans. If we would all do that, we could make America great again. We really could.
Oh, sounds great. A great healing moment. Yeah, not quite. Here's more Jimmy Kimmel.
This broadcast is being watched live by millions of Americans and around the world in more than 225 countries that now hate us.
And then he referred to the Trump insult of Meryl Streep.
We are here tonight to honor great actors, but we're also here to honor the actors who seem great, but actually really aren't. And of all the great actors here in Hollywood, one in particular has stood the test of time for her many uninspiring and overrated performances.
And that was actually a little funnier. But then he said, are you wearing an Ivanka tonight? Then came perhaps the most distasteful joke, at least of the monologue.
We're at the Oscars, the Academy Awards. You're nominated. You got to come. Your families are nominated. Your friends. Some of you will get to come up here on this stage tonight and give a speech that the President of the United States will tweet about in all caps during his 5 a.m. bowel movement tomorrow.
Then came the actual presentations. One guy, a Mexican actor, was up there talking about how he's a migrant and an actor and doesn't like walls. This is while he was supposedly presenting an award. The Iranian guy who boycotted the Oscars because of the executive order, sent someone to give a statement where he slammed Trump. Viola Davis, by all accounts, gave a passionate speech, but this is not about Trump. This is more the ego side of things.
I became an artist, and thank God I did, because we are the only profession that celebrates what it means to live a life.
Yeah, no, you're not. Let's go to the let's go to the very end of the night. Best Picture, Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway, and here's a montage of how that fiasco played out.
And the Academy Award for Best Picture.
You're awesome. Come on. La La Land.
Matt Pluff, you kicked this off. And Damien Chazelle, we're standing on your shoulders. We lost, by the way, but, you know.
Guys, I'm sorry. No.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Moonlight won. Come on, this is not a joke.
This is not a joke. I'm afraid they read the wrong thing.
This is not a joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture.
I want to tell you what happened. I opened the envelope. And it said, Emma Stone, La La Land. That's why I took such a long look at Faye and at you. I wasn't trying to be funny.
Jim, first of all, a lot of class on the La La Land team there, especially the guy who really implored the Moonlight people to come up. But Jim, after a night of moral self-righteous preening, not only during the show, but even during a lot of the ads for the Oscars, to screw up that badly at the end was... pretty nice.
Greg, I want to point out some really important facts that people have overlooked in the controversy since last night.
Yes.
La La Land won the popular vote. But in the Hollywood Electoral College, under the Hollywood Oscar Constitution, Moonlight, or is it Moonlighting or Moonlight? Moonlight, I guess. Yeah. I would have voted for Moonlighting with Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd.
Yes.
Moonlight won the Electoral College. Okay, I'm exaggerating with all that stuff. Boy, you know that internet meme, you had one job?
Yeah.
This is one of the classic you had one job moment. I just want to congratulate, I think probably the best response to the whole thing was Steve Harvey, who tweeted out, hey, I went to bed last night. Did I miss anything? Because Steve Harvey didn't announce the wrong winner in, I believe it was the Miss Universe contest.
Correct.
Or something.
Yes.
Like that. So yeah, I tried a lot to unpack here. Yes, we were not the least bit surprised to see Trump bashing in the monologue. I actually thought Jimmy Kimmel was better than usual in this because he didn't go too often in the laugh applause direction where the joke isn't really that funny, but everyone in Hollywood knows there's you know the target is politically correct. So, well, we're going to applaud that even though it didn't actually make us laugh. I thought the part that was most awkward, some people on Twitter were saying last night they thought it was really funny. So they have this tour group of ordinary folks who are just taking a tour of Hollywood stars' homes or studios or something, and they bring them in through the back door and through the back hallways. And surprise, they come out and they're at the Academy Awards. And of course they're starstruck, and of course they're, you know, taking their pictures, and Jimmy Kimmel's doing his jokes. But it was kind of like, look, Hollywood stars, here's some actual ordinary people. Those proles, aren't they wacky? It just kind of felt like this awkward museum piece. As it was happening, everybody's like, oh my God, I can hear the essays about the separation between the 1% and the rest of America, or the separation between Hollywood and all that stuff. Look, we know Hollywood. We know you love each other. We know you think you're very special. I'm glad you gave a round of applause to Meryl Streep because she hasn't had one of those in like, what, days, Greg? You know? This is
yes.
Where when Trump says she's overrated. Look, it's not that she's not good. It's that every – you have to say, Meryl Streep, the greatest actress of all time. It's kind of like, you know, peace be upon him when you mention Muhammad in Islam. You really have to put that after there. And so it's just kind of gets a little bit tiresome. I believe Oscars are the end of awards season, so we've survived another one. I did not feel particularly emotionally invested in any of the options, and I suppose they feel relieved there was no Oscars so white controversy or anything like that. Hollywood is always going to be egomaniacal. It's always going to be narcissistic. It's always going to be in love with itself. And it's always going to kind of look down its nose at the rest of the country. And that's part of what makes the elites the elite, is their separation from the rest of us. If you can avoid too much open contempt for your audiences, then I guess it's a good sign. So, you know, I'm happy to see the Oscars put away for another year. And we'll see which comedian gets the thankless task of trying to be just political enough, but not too political in next year's Oscars.
Jim, I know who feels the best. I know who probably also feels the worst after the big mix-up at the end. But you know who's really happy that happened? The Oscars producer who put the wrong picture in the In Memoriam segment for a costume designer. The name of the person was correct who passed away. The face was of someone who does work in costume design, but is very much alive. So good night all around, Oscars people.
You know, Saturday Night Live did that deliberately to John Lovitz a few years ago. Cutting to him in the audience and him looking around like, wait, what? Wait, did I die? Did somebody, you know, making fun of him for not working enough lately. So anyway, so thank goodness. Look, the Oscars resurrected someone.
Don't tell them that. They'll think they'll have that ability now. Jim, good to have you back. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.